Glitch Free Gaming.
Hey everyone, it's another episode of Glitch Free Gaming. It's episode number 142. Hooray!
Yay! We finally reached 142.
For the second time.
No, we definitely have never done 142 before. This is the 142nd podcast.
Right, okay, so what happened last week then? Did we not record at all?
We did not. Well, one of us did, apparently.
Yeah. One of us did, or maybe Dallas style, it was all just a big dream.
It's all a dream.
Yeah. So, yes, we didn't put out an episode last week, and we put up a post on Facebook just explaining what had happened. Was for some other funny reason, the recorder that we used to record the podcast had recorded only me, which is, would have been bizarre to listen to. We might just release that as like a hidden extra or something.
Yeah, I would like to release it at some point because I think it's really funny to listen to. Maybe not the whole like 2 hour thing.
No.
Cause it was a long podcast because we talked about the story about my uncle for a long time.
We did, yeah.
And a bunch of other stuff for a long time.
Yeah, so yeah, we might do that. But yeah, so that didn't go out. But the weirdest thing was it was you that recorded it, but yet it didn't record your voice.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened there.
That is, strange.
And it's annoying because it's a new recorder because we switched from the old one because it kept crashing when the podcast went too long.
Yes.
The first time it seemed fine. Second time, recorded half the audio. So this time we are both recording. And hopefully one of them will be fine, or worst case scenario, we both record each other somehow.
I know, it'll be bizarre. But yeah, so that is a little bit of housekeeping done. It's just myself and Kieran this week. But unfortunately, the episode has been lost, so that means the whole thing we did about a story about my uncle has been lost as well.
Yeah. I'd also announce it for the next thing, actually.
Yes, yeah.
So we'll need to. We're doing Final Fantasy Theatre Rhythm Curtain Call for the next game book club.
Yes,
and hopefully
we are.
Gremlins don't steal that one.
Yeah, because to go back and redo the whole discussion, I think it would... Nah, it kind of feel forced. And
yeah.
I think we've tried it once before with one of the lost episodes, and it just...
Yeah, I don't think it ever works out particularly well. It's fine if you lose like a bit of it, but the whole thing is just...
Yeah, because I think we've tried it before, maybe not to that extent, but we've tried to talk about the games that before.
Yeah.
And you end up, sometimes we'll make a joke as we're talking, and then you consciously remember that joke, and you tell it again, but now it's, it's not off the top of your head, and it becomes forced and shite, and if we wanted that, we'd just label ourselves IGN.
I would disagree, but then all the people I liked IGN left IGN, so...
Exactly.
Yeah. King of Funny Games is where it's at now.
Cool. So let's just do what we normally do and go through everything we've been playing. So what have you been playing this week?
Nothing
at all, okay.
Nothing at all. Except for a bunch of new things.
Woohoo!
Which is always a good thing when you're playing video games.
Yes.
Oh god, I guess I'll start with the newest, which is the newest of new because it's not out yet, which would be Battleborn.
Right. This is what do you call it? World of Warcraft's
MMO?
No.
This is Gearbox's first-person shooter, the guys that made Borderlands.
Ah, right, okay.
You're thinking of Overwatch.
I'm thinking of Overwatch.
Which is first-person shooter by Blizzard.
Yes.
It's very easy to confuse them because they're both kind of using some like MOBA-style mechanics. Not in terms of the modes, although Battleborn does kind of have a mode like that, but mainly in terms of like all the characters are referred to as heroes and they have 3 abilities and you can upgrade them and stuff like that.
Right.
There was a surprising amount of content in the beta. Like, there's a couple of multiplayer maps and modes. There's a single-player mission. 2 single-player missions, actually, I think. Which you can also play co-op. They kind of feel like they were intended to be played co-op. Which is the main thing I played, because competitive multiplayer shooters has not really been my thing for a while. You know, like I jump in now Splatoon and Battlefront here and there, but you know, it's kind of not. It's very unlikely for me to be super excited for, you know, a multiplayer shooter that's coming out unless it's Unreal Tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
Which this is not. So I played the single player stuff. I played the co-op with a friend of the show, Nathan, and we played through one of the missions, and the missions are pretty long, and it's quite interesting how they handle it, because before you go into a mission, you select a character, and they're one of these MOBA-style heroes, so they have a skill tree that you level up throughout the mission, so by the end of the mission, you end up with, you know, a pretty full skill tree of, you know, abilities, and then they reset the next mission you go into. They're not, you know, they don't stay there forever like in Borderlands.
Right.
And every character plays kind of differently, and they have different weapons, which is kind of a weird thing that I wasn't super into either, because every character has one weapon and like a couple of abilities, so you're using the exact same gun over and over and over, and I don't know, maybe it's just the way I play first person shooters, but I like running around picking up other guns and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the way I played Superhot was I picked up a gun, shot it once, and threw it, you know, that was, that's how I like playing games.
Yeah, I know this because I let you have a go of my Dead Rising on the 360. Oh, sorry, not the 360, on the Xbox One. I had the best weapon in the game, which I had kept for about 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Kieran gets it.
Gone.
Empties it. Into fuck all. Just shooting bits of the environment.
In my defense.
No. Tell me. You threw it away, and what did you pick up?
I don't know, something really dumb.
Yeah, it was like a fucking stop sign or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a fun game. I'd probably buy that. But yeah, exactly. That's the kind of thing I do. Like, I, you know, like to switch up weapons and stuff like that. I get, maybe I just have a short attention span. I get bored of guns pretty quickly. But in this, like, I played as two different characters. I played as an archer, who obviously you're using a bow and arrow the whole time, which is kind of slow, but, you know, it's decent. Like, it works. Uh-huh. It does a decent amount of damage. She has a bunch of, she has the attacks you would expect. Like, she has an area of effect attack where she fires a bunch of arrows into the air and they all fall down on top of them. You know, you got precision, almost like sniper shot that does more damage, that kind of stuff.
Right, okay.
Like, none of it's kind of super different in any way. But all the characters play pretty well. Like, I thought they were a bit dull to play as, but, you know, they at least control well. It's probably the best shooter mechanics that Gearbox has ever made. Like, one of the complaints about Borderlands has always been, you know, it's a fun, weird loot grind kind of RPG, but the actual shooting's not great. This is kind of, the shooting's fun. But then the rest of it is not, like, it's got a nice art style, graphics are quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
But then the level design is just really boring. It's just, you walk into a corridor and waves of enemies come at you, you fight the waves of enemies, and then sometimes you walk into a slightly bigger arena and waves of enemies come at you and you fight the waves of enemies. And none of them feel like, none of the levels feel like well designed in any way. It feels like we made a really simple thing and then threw a bunch of enemies into it.
Right, okay.
They're not like interesting to play through. They're just, if you told me they were randomly generated out of set pieces, I would believe you. And there's a couple of, there's like multiple boss fights in the level as well. Like, the level we played, which was the first level in the beta, is that it was surprisingly long. Like, it was a really long mission.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I could tell, no checkpoints. Like, you, or there's checkpoints for when you die, but if you backed out and went back in, you'd have to start the mission from the start again, which is not great.
Right.
But they're going for this weird kind of, it's this weird kind of matchmaking thing. So you're, you know, playing with friends and you go in and you play a mission and back out to the kind of overall menus and choose another one, essentially, rather than it being the kind of linear progression of you go through this level and then you load up next level and you go to the next level. So you're always going back to the menus at the end of a level. But it was just dull. Like, the level time was really boring. The writing is something else. Like, it's, if I remember correctly, you weren't super into the writing from Borderlands. Like, you didn't really play much Borderlands, but I didn't mind most of the writing in Borderlands. Like, it got a bit kind of meme heavy at a certain point.
Yeah.
But the Battleborn beta is the first game I have ever played where I've had to go into the options and turn the dialogue volume off because I was getting so, like, annoyed by the dialogue and the writing and the characters.
Wow, that's bad.
It is so bad. Like, every single character, like, some of this stuff would be kind of funny if it was one character doing it, but it's things like a character will tell a joke, you know, they'll say their one-liner kind of thing, but then right afterwards they'll explain the joke and go, haha, I made this joke about that thing. And, like, every character does that. And it's just, like, it would be kind of vaguely funny if one person did it, but everyone does it. And, yeah, your characters have, like, the kind of, like, one-liner kind of snarky quips they'll make while they're out shooting stuff.
Yeah.
Which is something that not many shooters do these days, and I feel like there's a good reason for that, and that's because it's really hard to record enough of those, especially when you have a lot of characters. And as a result, you hear them over and over and over, and they're really annoying. So I turned all that stuff off, and that improved my enjoyment of the game quite a bit, but it still was not very fun. And the fact that, you know, if you're playing a game where you have to do that, then it's not a good game.
No, there's something a little bit amiss there.
So I wasn't super into it. I then kind of went on to, like, NeoGAF and stuff like that and read other people's opinions, and it seemed like I wasn't alone in disliking it.
Right,
it's not being super well, you know, not being, I don't know, people don't seem to like it that much. But we will see how that game does, because that game comes out soon. It's, like, later. It's in, I think it's in May, actually.
Yeah.
Almost everything's coming out in May.
I know.
It's been a busy few months. But yeah, like, that comes out, and Overwatch comes out, which people keep confusing those two games, and I suspect Overwatch is going to do better, because it looks a lot better.
Right.
And then Doom is out, and Mirror's Edge is out. Like, there's a shit ton of things out next month. But yeah, I don't know if I'd recommend Battleborn. At the very least, try the beta if you're interested in it. I think it's up for a bit longer, if I remember correctly. It's supposed to be quite a long beta.
Right.
But I could be wrong. I uninstalled it after I played it that one time and was like, I'm done. I don't need to play this again.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not great. But then I played some good games.
Uh-huh.
Which is always good. I picked up Dark Souls 3.
Yeah.
Which came out on Tuesday. But my copy came on Saturday, so I was sitting playing on Saturday. And I played a lot of that game, which I was kind of surprised by, because I played a decent amount of Dark Souls 1, but then I kind of got bored of it and not interested in it and kind of just fell off it and didn't play anymore. Like, I was not a big fan of that series. I liked Bloodborne quite a lot. It made some good changes to the formula and did its own kind of separate thing, made it a bit more of an action game. And I, you know, really liked that, played through the whole thing. And, you know, thought that was really fun. And then Dark Souls 3 has learned a lot from Bloodborne, and so I'm kind of sticking with it so far. It's also a lot easier than I found the first Dark Souls, but I don't know if it's just because it's been so long and because I've played through all of Bloodborne. But so far I've not really found anything I've been struggling against. Like, I've died a bunch. Like, you always die a bunch in these games, but I've never died more than once against the boss, and I've never died more than twice against, like, an enemy in an area. And if I did, it felt like it was because I was underleveled, not because the game was being super unfair. It just felt like I was going somewhere I wasn't really meant to be yet.
Right.
And then after I came back with a couple of levels, it was fine. But that game is really good so far. They've definitely, like, improved the combat and stuff a lot from Bloodborne. Like, it's a lot faster paced. They didn't bring in, like, the trick weapon system from Bloodborne where you can switch modes, but they kind of added something similar where In Dark Souls, you can either one hand or two hand a weapon.
Right.
So you can either like hold it in one hand and have a shield in the other hand or something else in the other hand. But you can also just hold it in two hands and you'll do more damage, but you can't block, basically. Or you
Right.
can block a bit, but you're blocking with the sword, not with the shield, so you're not doing as much, blocking. But they've added, if you hold L2 when you're two-handing a weapon and then press one of the attack buttons, you do, I forget what they call it, it's like a skill, I think. But it's basically like a fancy attack that uses some of your magic bar.
Right.
Which also something Dark Souls hasn't had, I don't think. I don't think Dark Souls had a magic bar before. Demon's Souls did a long time ago.
Right.
But now you have a magic bar as well. So you have a health bar and a magic bar. These attacks use up the magic bar, and then presumably spells also do. I'm playing as just a melee build because I went in kind of scared of Dark Souls and was like, well, I'm just going to stock up on as much armor as possible and be a big heavy guy that runs around with a sword killing things and hiding behind a shield. And that's been working well for me so far, but it means I don't have any of the spells. So I don't
Right.
think I've got any. I don't have enough points into any of the stats that I need to, cast any spells if I wanted to.
Right.
It's interesting because there's some weird things in that game. Like, the previous games all had Estus flasks, which you use for. They're basically they're healing potions that regenerate when you rest at a bonfire. And bonfires are basically like the checkpoints in the levels.
Right.
Like the lanterns in Bloodborne. And when you rest at those, you get your Estus flask back, and you can increase the number of Estus flasks by. In the first game, you got Firekeeper souls, and you gave them to Trader, and they increased your Estus flask and all that stuff. Now you find shards of Estus flasks, and again, give them to Trader, and it gives you more Estus flasks. But you can then allot them, so you can choose either I want all of them to be healing flasks, or I want some of them to be healing flasks and some of them to heal my magic bar.
Okay.
Which seems like a cool system. But if you're playing like me and you're never using magic and only rarely using skills, I don't give a fuck about that magic bar. So I'm running around with like 9 healing flasks, which might be part of the reason why I'm finding it so easy. It's like I can heal for days. Like I don't give a fuck. I just run around heal constantly. Like sometimes I drink Estus flasks just because I feel like it, even if I'm not damaged. Like fuck it, I've got them. I've got tons of them.
I'm fucking thirsty.
Exactly. Tastes great. So yeah, it's weird. I bet it'd be more balanced on a like New Game Plus run, or if you're trying out more than just the melee stuff, which I might do. I might try to delve into some of the magic stuff because I do seem to find it a bit easy, and the magic stuff's always quite fun in those games. But I'm enjoying it quite a lot, and again, I've not been finding it super difficult because
Okay, right.
it feels a bit more linear than the first Dark Souls in some ways. Like you're kind of just a bit more like Bloodborne in that way. Like there's shortcuts and there's little side passages stuff like that, but they kind of all loop around themselves for the most part. You're just kind of going from point A to B and then through a series of levels essentially. But they're very well made levels. Like they're super well designed. And they all look fantastic. It's a really pretty game. Looks a lot nicer than Bloodborne, I would say. A lot of sections do just look like Bloodborne, though, which you can
Right.
expect because, same guys, same engine presumably, some same assets, I would assume. But yeah, Dark Souls 3, I'm really enjoying it. I know it's been getting kind of mixed reception from some people. Some people seem into it, some people don't. I think part of the reason I might be liking it so much is just that I've not. I think some people are a bit burnt out on the From game formula at this point.
Yeah, and they're maybe just, yeah, subconsciously they need a break in, but they refuse. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, because like we had Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, Dark Souls 2, a re-release of Dark Souls 2, Bloodborne, and then now this. But I only played like, maybe at most a fifth of Dark Souls and then Bloodborne. I played a little bit of Demon's Souls at some point as well, actually. I was meant to go back to Demon's Souls because I kind of liked some of the story stuff in that a bit more than Dark Souls. But yeah, don't know, it's a weird series. But I'm not so burnt on out on it, but I think it's just because I've not been playing them. You know, I could definitely see people be like, I don't need more Dark Souls just now, because I've had a lot of it.
Yeah, they did kind of come out at sort of high speed, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it's very well made. It's a very fun game.
Good, I'm glad. Not a game for me, but...
Yeah. Like, it won't... It doesn't really fix the things from Bloodborne that you didn't like.
Right.
If anything, it probably would be more frustrating in a lot of ways.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, like I said, I find it easier than Bloodborne so far, which might just be the build I'm playing, might just be the weird thing about it.
Right.
But it's still very, you know, niggly in the way it plays.
Right. No, that's fair enough.
But, yeah, I'm doing it. Other than that, though, I bought a lot of games over the past week, as it turns out.
Kieran, you bought loads of games. I don't believe that.
This might be a like record, though, in terms of number of games I've bought in period of time.
Right, okay.
For this podcast, at least.
Right, what did you do?
I bought that, and it came out Saturday.
Right.
I bought Nitro Plus Blaster's Heroine Infinite Duel, I think is the full name of it.
Yeah.
Which came out on Thursday, I think. I think I got my copy on Friday, though. It might have just came out on Friday.
Right.
But that is... Actually, yeah, it came out Friday. I got my copy on Saturday. That is a 2D fighting game.
With lots of girls and...
Anime girls.
Yes, and they all happen to be the girls that we were taking the mic out of Nathan for.
Not all of them, just one of them.
Most of them.
No, most of them are not. Most of them are, they're all from visual novels, but most of them are from
Kinky more... Dirty Ones.
No, most of them are not from Kinky Dirty Ones, so they're kind of more, you know, they're not as crazy over the top design. Some of them are a bit weird, like there's Sonico, who has massive boobs and throws cats at people. But she's pretty great. She's like the mascot, essentially, I think. I don't know much about this company or about these visual novels. Right. The only character I recognise in it is Saber from Fate Stay, because I watched the anime of Fate Stay Night at one point.
Right, okay.
And someone on my Facebook pointed out that one of the characters is from Psycho Pass, I think it was.
Right.
Which I think either has or is getting an anime. I'm not too sure about all this stuff.
Right.
But basically, it's a bunch of characters. They're all from visual novels.
Right.
And they're brought together into this weird fighting game. And it's actually a surprisingly fun fighting game. So it's like a weird... it feels kind of like the Marvel vs. Capcom games in a way. Not quite as like air juggle heavy as those were.
Right, yeah.
But more like kind of one of the older Marvel vs. Capcoms, like 1 or 2 rather than 3.
Uh-huh.
But it's a lot of... like it's very fast-paced. Your characters have a role, which is kind of weird. I don't know if I've played a fighting game before. I play a lot of fighting games, I guess, actually. But like, I'm not super into fighting games in a massive sense, but... I don't think I can think of an RPG game where you have a button that just rolls your character towards the other character.
This
is weird. It's essentially like a dodge button. You're just using it to close in. It's like one of the big things about fighting games is usually you're zoning and, you know, keeping your opponent at bay and, you know, in range of your attacks and while staying out of range of theirs.
Yes.
And this roll button just lets you just dodge all their attacks and get right up next to them. Which is kind of fun, keeps everything really fast paced. All the characters have it's actually interesting, the characters don't have like a stupid amount of attacks. It's not like most anime fighting games. I think it's one of the reasons I'm liking it so much, actually, is it's not like a lot of other anime fighting games where, you know, like BlazBlue, which, as much as I love BlazBlue, has like, you know, 7 different meters on screen that all do different things.
Yes.
And you have like 40 different inputs that will activate each of those meters in 7 different ways, and you're like, I just got to mash buttons, I'm done. There are people that are probably really good at BlazBlue, but I will never be one of them because there's too much going on. This is a lot simpler. You have 1 meter that's essentially, you know, your super bar, and you have a kind of burst, which is kind of like Blazblue had it as well. It's just, you know, gets you out of a combo essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, your meter is just, you know, a super meter is split into three sections. You have, you know, two special attacks that use up, you know, one section of it, and then you have, you know, your kind of ultimate that uses up all three of it. It's, you know, very kind of standard fighting gamey stuff.
Yep.
But it plays really well. It's really fun. You can kind of button mash it quite a bit, but also, you know, there's a good amount of skill to it. But it's interesting. It doesn't seem super well balanced is the one thing I'd complain about. There's a couple of characters, like the character you mentioned there that's from the Booby game that Nathan was playing. She is essentially Wolverine from Marvel vs. Capcom.
Right, okay.
Because she has Wolverine-like claws, and she can leap across the whole screen with the press of a button, and then you mash it, and she just kind of goes into this juggling kind of really long combo thing where she's slashing the hell out of you, and it's like impossible to get out of and takes all your health, and it's just so broken. And there's Sonico, who seems like, I played against Nathan a few times at this, and I played online like a couple of times, and some people don't seem to know how to play her, but for the most part it seems pretty easy that you just, almost all of her attacks throw cats or turn one of the cats that are following her around. She throw a cat in the ground and it just starts following her around. Or you can order cats to move around and they'll like run towards the opponent and stuff like that. And then also you can hit a button and the cat will turn into a person, like an anime lady.
Right.
Burst out of this cat and then attack them. So all your attacks are these cats, and it's really hard to keep track of where the cats are if you're fighting against Sonico. So you're just getting attacked by random like anime girls showing up seemingly out of nowhere because a cat ran under your feet. It's really weird and kind of broken, but it's fun. My favorite character has been, I think her name is Mora, something like that. And she is like this little kind of shorter anime girl, looks kind of like, you know, kind of younger girl, girlish, kind of gothic looking. And she has like this big mallet that she uses, like a big kind of stone hammer that she uses for fighting. But her, like every character has, you know, kind of, you know, an ultimate attack that does, it has like a little kind of anime intro, and then, you know, will do a bunch of damage. Hers is that she does a kind of regular attack and knocks the opponent to the ground. And as they're lying on the ground, she holds the mallet above her head and presses a button on it. And this massive spike comes out of the side of the mallet. And then she slams down with that and stabs through them with this already massive, heavy like mallet that would already be crushing them. And it's just so good. It's bizarre. But yeah, it's just a really fun light game. Like, given that most of the fighting games I've been playing recently are things like Guilty Gear and Skullgirls and stuff like that, that are kind of... Skullgirls is easy to get into, but, you know, has a lot of depth and has the stuff to learn how to play fighting games properly built into it. Guilty Gear is one of the kind of most hardcore fighting games there is. This is a very light kind of button mashy kind of fun thing, which, given that it's been so long since we've got something like that, like when was Soul Calibur last out?
Yeah, true.
You know, like it's, you know, it's not, it doesn't play similarly to Soul Calibur, but it kind of fits that kind of that slot in my games.
Kind of, yeah, it's one of those that you can jump in. You can jump into it immediately, and then, you know, after a while, kind of pick up on the nuances. It's not like Blazblue. Blazblue, you need to take a fucking course.
Definitely. It's interesting. It's got a lot of modes in it. It's got a story mode, which is actually basically just an arcade mode, but has some like cutscenes in between where characters talk to each other. They're all the kind of BlazBlue style, but the arc system works style. Well, it makes more sense for this because all the characters are from visual novels anyway, but it is that kind of visual novelish kind of thing where there's some dialogue and you know, button through it. It seems like the story seems like complete and utter nonsense. Like, it is the most anime bullshit to get all these characters from different games together. It's bizarre. Like, I tried following it when I played through the arcade mode the first time, but it's just nonsense. Then there's another story mode, which is more more like something like Blaze Blue, from what I could tell, because it seems it's called Another Story, and it's just, from what little I looked into it, it seems like it's entirely visual novel stuff. I don't think there's any fighting actually in it.
All right, okay.
So I don't know about that one. I need to try it a bit longer, I think. But then there's, you know, a couple other modes, like a score attack mode, and there's all the multiplayer stuff you'd want. And yeah, it's fun. I've been playing a decent amount of that because it's just a fun and light game to get into.
Cool.
All the characters are pretty fun. At the moment, there's free DLC, like the Senran Kagura character is DLC.
Oh, right, okay.
But it's free at the moment. I don't know how long she is free for.
Ah, right, fair enough.
And there's another character as well who is also free. I think she's called Heart. Not 100% sure. Again, like, I don't know who any of these characters are. But there's like tons of characters in it. Like, there's a decent amount just for fighters, but then there's you choose two assist characters that are mapped to I think it's either L1 and L2, or it's L2 and R2, I can't remember.
Right.
But that just calls them in, they do like one attack and then they back out again. Uh-huh. Kind of like the tag system in Marvel vs. Capcom, only you can't fully tag in. So it's like tag system with just the kind of assist stuff.
Right.
But yeah, it's fun. I'd recommend it. It's pretty cheap as well. I picked up for £24, something like that.
Yeah, I seen you pick it up. I was and I was tempted, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it depends if you're in a fighting game mode or not.
It's, yeah, exactly.
It's one of the easy kind of, you know, button mashy ones, like I said. But I've enjoyed it quite a lot. But then I kind of stopped playing that to some degree, mainly because I got Dark Souls. But then also right. because I picked up a game that came out on Tuesday in America.
Right,
comes
okay.
out next week here.
Okay. What did
actually,
you pick up?
I don't know. It won't actually even be out by the time this podcast goes out.
Right, okay.
Because it comes out next Friday here. I picked up Ratchet and Clank.
Oh, okay.
Which is a reboot of the Ratchet and Clank series, a remake of the first Ratchet and Clank game. Sort of, but they've changed a ton of it. They describe it as the game based on the movie, based on the game. Because they're making a movie based on the first Ratchet and Clank game, and
right.
changing a bunch of stuff for that movie, and then this game is, you know, changing a bunch of stuff from that movie and the first game, and it's weird. But it's really fun so far. It's interesting, because I have this kind of nostalgia for Ratchet and Clank that I don't have for a lot of other game series. You know, like, there's a handful of things, like, I think I explained when Mario Maker came out that, like, Mario 3 and Mario World, I have, you know, this kind of nostalgia for, because I remember playing uh-huh. a lot as a kid. But one of the main things that I have nostalgia for is Ratchet and Clank 1, which is because when I first got my PlayStation 2 as a kid, I was coming off of the Nintendo 64. And so we didn't really understand about memory cards.
Right.
So we got a PlayStation 2 and we got a copy of Ratchet & Clank and we didn't get a memory card for it. I say we, my dad bought all this stuff and, you know, I didn't know either. Like, I wasn't even reading game magazines at this time. I was just kind of like, oh man, this seems cool, I want a PlayStation. So I got Ratchet & Clank and it took me not very long to realise, oh, I need something to save this game to. So I understood the concept of memory cards because the Nintendo 64 had the memory pack, but you know most games didn't need it.
Yeah.
But everything obviously needed it on PS2 because you can't write to discs. So I didn't get a memory card for a good like couple of weeks or so that I first had my PS2, and the only game I had was Ratchet and Clank, and like you know the demo disc came with it. So I played a lot of the first few levels of Ratchet and Clank over and over because I would play a bunch of them and then have to go to bed or something, turn the console off.
Yeah.
Save gone. So those first few levels are like imprinted in my brain, basically. Like I know them off by heart. Like when I recently picked up the HD collection of Ratchet and Clank and was playing through that first game again, and like
you
I knew
do it blindfolded
pretty much, like I knew where everything was and knew where all the secrets were, because again even once I got the memory card for that, like I still Ratchet and Clank was the game I had, and so you know I 100% did that. I found every secret in that game, I did everything you could do in that game. And playing this reboot is actually really good for that, in that way. Because most of the levels are very similar to the way they were in the original. Some of them are like identical, but they've changed stuff up in quite a cool way because they, I mean, the mechanics are essentially the same as the last Ratchet and Clank game, like A Crack in Time or Into the Nexus. So you kind of upgraded better shooting. They've got the full upgrade system for all the guns in there. They've got more and different guns. And so, you know, it plays like a modern Ratchet and Clank game. And so they've upgraded the levels, updated the levels in ways that make sense for the mechanics of that,
Right.
while keeping almost everything they could from the original levels. And so you go through some levels and it'll just be like, this is identical to how I remember it on the PS2. And then you'll turn a corner and be like, except for this. I
Right.
don't remember this. This jump wasn't here. These platforms weren't here. This section wasn't here. All the Clank-only sections are completely changed to be their own thing. And all of the story stuff has changed, so it's loosely connected. Like, you go to different planets. You go to the same planets, but in like a different order. They've merged some planets together. Like, I was playing through one of the areas is it's an asteroid with like a kind of research facility on it, and they're testing weapons in there. And you go out and you go through it, and in the original game, you go through it and there's like a boss fight at the end, and then you leave. But in this one, they've changed it. So the boss fight at the end is actually a boss fight that was on a different level in the first game. But
Right.
presumably that level isn't in there anymore. And so they just put the boss fight in this one.
Okay.
Which is cool. It works really well. And it makes it feel like a new game. Which is backed up by like the rest of it. Because graphically, this is one of the best looking games on the PS4. Like, which I wasn't really expecting going in. I thought it looked nice, but it is genuinely one of the prettiest games on the PS4. Presumably because they're, you know, making it tie into the movie, and so they're trying to make it look as close to the movie as possible.
Right, yeah.
But it just, it looks stunning. It looks gorgeous. So that's pretty awesome. I don't know, do you have much of a history with the Ratchet and Clank series?
No.
No.
No, I kind of, when you had Ratchet and Clank going on, I'd had my fill of that style of game with
Yeah.
kind of Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, the kind of character action stuff was kind of done.
Yeah.
The action platformer stuff.
Yeah, you know, I kind of, by that point, I'd already discovered Tomb Raider, so
Yeah.
I was busy burning through Tomb Raider and Tomb Raider 2 and 3 and Revelation and things like that at the time.
I kind of enjoyed like platformers and stuff like that on Nintendo 64, and then when I got my PS2, you know, Ratchet and Clank was like, oh, this is what platformers are now. This is kind of the new platformer. I like this. I never got into Jak and Daxter quite as much. I've played all of the Jak and Daxter games, I think, all except for Jak X, which was like the weird racing one.
Right.
But I could never get into them quite as much as Ratchet and Clank. I just thought Ratchet and Clank played better and had, I thought they were more consistent, basically. It's like
Yeah.
all the Ratchet and Clank games, like, it's one of those series that you can get burnt out on pretty easily because they play pretty similar to each other. But they play very similar to each other, but they play really well. Like, they just refine the stuff every time, and they've gotten really good at making that kind of game. It's one of the things, it's one of the reasons I really want Xbox One for Sunset Overdrive.
Right.
Because Sunset Overdrive is kind of that style of game, but open world, and, you know, some stuff is different. But if you
Yeah,
had
yeah.
called, if you, if they'd called Sunset Overdrive Ratchet and Clank, no one would have batted an eyelid. Like, it's, you know, if it played exactly the same, stuff like that. Like, it's similar enough in that kind of way.
Right.
But yeah, I am loving this game so far. It's, I actually stopped playing Dark Souls for it when I got it. I sat and played like a few hours of it. Like, good 2 or 3 hours of it, and then stopped. I thought, right, I need to stop, go take a break, do something else. Went, did something else, came back, and I was like, I'm gonna play Dark Souls, because I need to
Cool.
get through some Dark Souls. Load up Dark Souls, and then 5 minutes later, it's like, I just want to play Ratchet and Clank. I just want to, it's, I don't care about this, you know, grim, dark, hot, you know, fantasy stuff. I just want, you know, light-hearted comic, you know, cartoony, you know,
Yeah.
fuzzballs shooting people. And it's great for that. It's pretty easy, which I assume is because the movie seems very focused on like a kid audience.
Right, okay.
Because you know, it's an animated movie coming out in cinema. So it makes sense to be somewhat easy and aimed at kids, but it's fun for that.
Cool.
Some of the humor and stuff in it is really good as well, actually. Some of the writing is great. They've got a lot of references in there for people that are fans of the series. Whereas, you know, if you weren't a fan of the series and you didn't know anything about it, you could still go in and just go, this is, you know, a fun, you know, funny 3D platformer. But it's got, like, early on there's a... one of the bits they've kind of kept the same between the original and this is you go into an area and there's this janitor that gives you a thing so you can progress. And in this one, you go and talk to him and he goes, haven't we met before? I've got like major deja vu about this. And Ratchet's sitting there like, no, I've like never left my home world before. I've never been here before. I've never met you before. And he's like, all right, weird, just must be deja vu. And then, like, all the cutscene stuff, like, with him play out, and that section of the game plays out, and then, you know, they say their goodbyes, and this janitor guy turns around as he's walking away, and he goes, bye, Ratchet, I'll see you in the next reboot. And just walks off, and it's like, that's great, good job.
Nice.
But yeah, it's...
It's nice that they, you know, they're able to have a little bit of fun with their own definitely. IP, and it's, definitely. You know, it's a little bit of a wink-wink, nudge-nudge. I'm okay with that, you know. I quite like to see that in games and video and films.
I have to say, this is, like, not... I can't think of another reboot of a series or a reboot of a game that has done this before, where it has taken the first game in the series and then changed it so much but kept it similar.
Like,
this weird thing. Like, we get a lot of HD remakes or... Yes. Full-on remakes where they, you know, completely redo a game's graphics, but it's still just, you know, that game level for level cutscenes.
Yes.
Like Gears of War Ultimate, which was, you know, a remake where they ported it to the new engine, redid all the assets and stuff like that, but it was still just Gears of War 1. They didn't change anything.
Yeah.
This is just, it's a new game. Like, it's a new game that has some of the stuff from the first game in it. And it's really good for that. It's genuinely... some of the most fun that I've had on the PS4. And it's one of those things that also makes me sad in a way, because it's like, people don't really make 3D platformers anymore. Except for Nintendo, when they bring out their Mario game once a generation.
Yeah.
Like, we got two full Ratchet & Clank games last generation, and then like a couple of spin-offs. There was that one Sly Cooper game that was really good. But then that's kind of been it. You know, it's not really a big genre of games anymore.
No.
Which kind of makes me sad, because I really like those games. So I kind of hope this does well, and I kind of hope that things like, you know, the Banjo-Kazooie guys got that Kickstarter for Yooka-Laylee. Like, I hope that does well. Like, I hope these things will do well so we can get more of those kind of games, because I like those games. They're fun types of games.
Cool.
Other than that,
you must have bought something else.
There's three things. I think I did buy something else, but I don't know what. I was really tempted to play Enter the Gungeon, or buy Enter the Gungeon even.
Right.
Actually, I guess that's something to say. Like, so, dumb things. I didn't pre-order Dark Souls 3, because I wasn't super sold on whether I was going to get it or not.
Yeah.
Then, again, friend of the show, Nathan. Well, he pre-ordered the collector's edition that came with the big statue stuff, but also pre-ordered a cheaper copy of the game from somewhere, because it was going for £32, I think it was.
Alright, okay.
When it's like a 40 quid game at launch everywhere else. And it went up to like 40 quid on that game, on that website closer to release. It was just, they had this voucher code, got this for 32. So I sent him 32 quid and bought that pre-order off him, basically.
Yes, yeah.
So I had to go through to his to pick it up on Saturday when it showed up. So I went through and then we sat and played a bunch of games, because, you know, it's all right there, might as well play some games.
Yep.
And we played Street Fighter V, which is kind of the first time since the beta I've kind of sat and actually, you know, played a bunch of Street Fighter V.
Right.
And, you know, like, for all the issues that game has in terms of its content and, you know, its fucked up servers and, you know, all the issues it's been having, at its core, in terms of, like, the fighting and the characters and stuff like that, it's still a fantastic fighting game.
Okay.
Like, it is, you know, among the best that Street Fighter has been in terms of just how the mechanics work. But then, you know, everything else around it's kind of a shit show.
Right.
But we played some of that. That was pretty good. We actually played some of the co-op of Enter the Gungeon. So, Enter the Gungeon is this twin stick shooter roguelike. So it's something kind of like, you know, Crypto Necrodancer or Nuclear Throne or Binding of Isaac or something like that,
Right,
but
okay.
a twin stick shooter. So you're just running through a bunch of rooms, blowing up enemies, finding items, opening chests, and, you know, exploring a dungeon that's randomly generated, basically, or a gungeon. So, like, the whole theme of this game is you're going into this gungeon, which is a dungeon that is shaped like a gun, to find a gun that can kill the past, I think is the only description you're given of the story, pretty much. We try to
Right,
find a gun
okay.
that will kill the past. And then you go through these randomly generated dungeons, you fight a boss at the end of every floor of every dungeon, and they're all references to things, and they're really well done. All the enemies you fight are bullets. They're like sentient bullets that are running around shooting guns at you, which is bizarre. And the bosses are mostly bullets as well. Like there's one that was a that I saw when we were playing co-op. There was a reference to Vulcan Raven from Metal Gear Solid, who
Right.
is he was called Gatling Gull. He's like this
Right.
bird that's not a raven, but it kind of looks like a raven. It comes down and picks up a big Gatling gun and shoots around and stuff like that. And it's just this cool little boss fight. And everything is kind of referential in that way. But it's really cool. It's really well made. Really, like, solid just in terms of gameplay. Like, you're just running around shooting stuff. It's got some weird mechanics. Like, you can flip over tables in some of the rooms and use them as cover.
Right, okay.
Or do what I did, which was flip over tables and then push them into the doorway so that Nathan can't progress.
Fair
So
enough.
you can, you know, kind of annoy people. But yeah, it seems really fun. I've only played a little bit of a co-op. I've not played a massive amount of it. But it seems like a good variation to the guns you get. Like, the co-op, it seems like you can only play as one character during co-op. So the co-op character has a gun that shoots out little Nerf darts with, you know, little Nerf darts that have, like, plungers on the end of them, so they stick to things.
Yes.
Basically, you know, shoots those. And they stick to things, so they stick to the walls, they stick to enemies, and they stay there forever, which is really good. So, like, by the end of us running through a dungeon, we'd be going through, like, some of the rooms, make sure we hadn't missed anything. You just see all these little darts, like, stuck to the walls everywhere. Which is pretty awesome. But, like, I found a gun that was Deckard's gun from Blade Runner. You know, that
Oh.
kind of thing. Like, you find a bunch of references to things.
Right, okay.
It seems fun. I will probably pick up at some point, 'cause I quite like roguelikes and I like twin stick shooters, so it's a good mix. I think it's supposed to be coming to Vita at some point soon as well, but that was on PS4. I can't remember if we played anything else. I think about it. But yeah, we played those, which were fun games.
Excellent.
What about you, Mike? I think you played games.
Yeah, I played a few. So a couple of things I did, I think should mention this because we spoke about it quite a lot in the podcast that nobody will ever hear,
Lost podcast.
the Lost Podcast, or one of the Lost Podcasts anyway.
Lost podcast where we talked about
Yeah.
Lost.
But in the last episode that you would have listened to, Kieran, you spoke quite a lot about Trackmania.
Yes.
And
Oh yeah, we didn't. We talked so much about Trackmania last week.
yeah, so I did pick up a copy of the game after, you know, we had the conversations, and I essentially said to you, right, sell the game to me. And we had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, we did, we ended up doing a marathon Saturday session with Nathan. We played for 5 hours. Kieran had made up a playlist of bullshit tracks.
Oh man, they were so good.
Yeah, they were really
So
good.
good bullshit tracks. Like, tracks that you Well, it's kind of all the ones I described when I was selling you in the game. You know, tracks like, you know, here's a bunch of boost pads that go straight towards a ramp, try and land in the finish lane.
Yeah. yeah, just all these kind of random tracks, and we ended up playing this playlist for like 5 hours. And the frightening thing was at the end, because we were just, you know, having a good time and kind of laughing and joking and just enjoying ourselves, but we actually became good at these tracks. So we would have people jump into the room, and they'd be posting these tracks, and they would bugger off because we were just like, you know, wiping the floor with anyone that came close to it. Whereas if they'd come in like 2 hours before, we would have just been crashing off everywhere. There was
Yeah,
points where
exactly.
I'd got fed up, and I decided to see how long I could drive in a straight line and see if the textures in the game would change.
Yeah, because those levels, I assume there must be an end to them on console. On PC, I don't think there was. I think they just kind of went out forever. But, you know, there's a certain point where you hit the level of detail. You know, you hit the bit where it's like, oh, this is all low texture because you're only meant to see it from the track. You know,
Yes, yeah.
you're not ever meant to be able to see this stuff up close. Why are you driving here? Go away.
Yeah. Yes, so I did that. I also tried one of the tracks was like on an island, and I ended up trying to see how far I could drive underwater.
Yeah, there's no water doesn't stop you. You
No,
just
it
drive
don't.
underwater as much as you want.
Yeah, it becomes a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
And the camera does this weird thing where it kind of pulls away, and you get like a top-down view.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's strange, but yeah. But it is a really good game, so it was just to back up what you were saying on the last episode as well.
Yeah, I'm not a crazy person. Trackmania is great.
Yeah.
I guess since we didn't talk about it, because, you know, last week's didn't go out, like, after that, I'd sat and, you know,
Yes, you went.
deconstructed all of you and Nathan's times.
Yes.
Like, I went and beat all of your campaign bans. I don't know if you've beat any of mine since then.
No,
I know
I.
Nathan went back and was like, hey, a handful of these are tracks I really like, so I'm going to beat your time on them because I like those tracks. And then I also beat some of Ali's track times. And since then, Ali has destroyed all of my times except for one, because Ali's really good at that game.
He is,
He's
yeah.
so much better than any of us.
Yes. So, I haven't went back. I fiddled about with it a little bit because I have been playing other things, which I may as well move on to them now. So I managed to get a review copy, a loan of the review copy of a game that we had, which is the Sebastian Loeb Rally Evil,
All right.
which. It's not that long out. The review went up a few weeks ago on the site.
Yeah.
So Ben had covered it. I think Ben had spoken about the game when he was on the show. I
I
think
think
he
he did,
just
yeah.
yeah I think he just finished the review at the time. Yeah,
How do you feel about it, Mike?
I think I just want to go and buy dirt, if I'm brutally
Yeah.
honest. Yeah.
It felt like I didn't play it, but from what I saw of it, because I always keep an eye on those things, I like rally games. It reminded me of the WRC games that we both bought a couple of, or you got a few copies of, I think.
No,
Or did you buy those?
I bought them, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I bought them
those, it
for
reminded me of
sale, yeah.
those, in that they were fun, but they were pretty low budget and not. You wouldn't really call them the best racing games ever, but you know, they were fun.
Yeah.
But I don't know if
So
Sebastian Loeb is as fun as those were.
it is it so it's got all the different modes and things like that. The variety's there. The kind of maps are not the best looking, but you can live with it. It's okay. You know, not every game is going to be Colin McRae Dirt, or you know, Colin McRae Rally or Dirt or
Few
what have you.
things. Few
Yeah.
things.
There's not going to be a lot of rally games that are going to be like that. So I kind of accept that, and that's fine. The issue that I'm having is the control. It feels like racing games have been knocked back a couple of years. You know, it's like you're playing an older game. Yes, it's on the new console, but the controls, I think Ben put it in his review, and he said something's amiss, just something's not right. It's not sitting right. Maybe
car handling just not what you would expect from it.
Yeah, normally when you're playing kind of a racing game, I think you'll find it as well, Kieran, it feels, the best way to describe it is the controller feels tight.
Yeah.
You know, that the...
Or if it feels loose, it feels in a kind of drifty, fun way. Like, yeah. It feels intentional.
Yes, yeah. You know, so you get the feedback at the right places, and it's not... this has got force feedback in it, that, you know, near enough every game these days has, but it just feels lackluster. It's like it's very light, you know, so you're not getting, you know, when you slam around a corner, you're not getting the feel of the tires fighting the gravel, churning the gravel up so you can get the traction to take off in the right direction.
Yeah,
you're not getting that force feedback that we're used to. The car does feel quite floaty. It's, yeah, it just, something's not 100% right, and it's rather difficult to try and put your hands on, your finger rather, on what the issue is.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you go and you pick up a game like Forza and Forza Horizon. Pick up Forza Horizon. Forza Horizon is an arcadey game. But it has got that force feedback, and the controller is more tactile, is what I'm trying to get to. You get the feeling that what you're doing, you know, it's subtle movements on the joystick, turning, tickling the brake or the handbrake has an effect. With Sebastian Loeb, I end up playing, so when I'm playing the game, I end up, I don't know if you hear this through the mic, but... You know, that is me. I'm constantly switching between my brake and my accelerator, which is what you're meant to do, but not to that extent.
It just doesn't feel good.
Yeah. It just, something's off a little bit. So I've played a little bit. I don't know how much more I'm going to play. And I don't know how much more I can resist not buying Dirt.
Yeah, Dirt Rally's out. Soon?
I think it's already out.
I wasn't sure. I've been avoiding it because I will end up buying it. I don't have money for that.
Yeah, I'm the exact same. It's like I've been keeping myself busy with everything else because it came out.
I love rally games. I love Codemasters games. Like, it's it's perfect, but I can't afford it.
Yes. We've played quite a lot of the Dirt games together. You know, so it is a series that we do like, so I'm trying to stay away from it as well.
Pretend it's a Dirt Showdown again. Pretend it's not a real Dirt game.
Exactly, but the other thing is, when I've been playing this one, I've been remembering Dirt 3, you know, all those different events and things. It's like, shit, it's poor in comparison.
Which is fair. Most things are. It's, again, that kind of thing Dark 3 is great.
Yeah.
All Dark games are great.
Yes. This is not a bad game. You know, it does the rally thing. It does it quite well. Personally, I wouldn't pay full price for it.
Yeah. I always felt that way about WRC games as well. Like, they were good games, but they were asking way too much for it.
Yeah. And you know, if it was a bad game, if it was truly a shit game, I wouldn't be talking about it right now. I would be telling you that I'd put it in, I played three races, and it's now lying broken, crumpled up in the bin.
Yeah.
But no, I've played through the...
Is it your copy though? That's not Ben's review copy. You probably shouldn't do that.
No, I shouldn't, no.
I'm sure you'd understand, but you probably shouldn't do that
stuff. Yeah, no, I don't think it would take it too well. But yes, you know what I mean. You know, I would be saying that's it. I'm not playing it anymore. The game's away. But I've played through the two of the career. So it breaks down this whole career thing. and I've finished one section of the, I think it's the rookie or the newbie or whatever it calls it, series of events. Three kind of sections consisting of 10 races or 10 events in the first one, then 7 events, then another 7 to make up the 3 separate events. I've done the first 10 on the first one, completed it, got all golds, went back and repeated some of the races so I could get the gold medals.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
It sounds like it's okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not scratching the itch that I wanted it to.
Yeah. Now, still got Trackmania, though.
I have, yes.
For your arcadey racing, you don't get much arcadier than Trackmania.
Exactly.
Speaking of games that they're not, they're one of a kind.
Yeah.
No one really makes anything like Trackmania.
No. But yeah, so it's not Sebastian Loeb, Rally Evo's fault that it's not scratching that itch. It's me being a cheap ass that I should go out and buy Dirt.
Yeah. Well, if it was a better rally game, it would scratch that itch.
Yeah. Fair enough. It's all its fault. Send them a letter. Buy the game and send the developers a letter.
Thanks to you guys, I spent £40 on Dirt Rally. Thanks a lot, guys. Your game cost me money.
Yeah. So I also been playing played that, and I picked up Quantum Break for the Xbox One.
Oh yeah, I forgot about this.
Yes. So,
I mean, not about the game, but that you played it.
Yes. So during the last episode I'd played a little bit before starting recording the podcast. And then we spoke so much about Trackmania, and we spoke so much about story about my uncle and things like that, but we never spoke about Quantum Break.
Yeah.
So I have now played, I estimate, about 5 to 6 hours.
Okay.
That I've put into.
On a scale of 1 to Alan Wake, how good is it?
It is... it's different.
I want us to change the review scale on Glitch Free Gaming for everything to be between one
and
Alan
Wake. it's different. Now, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, different's good. Yeah. Or can be, at least.
Yes, yeah. So, I was... again, I did my usual thing. Any game that I'm kind of interested in, I'll learn as much as I kind of... it takes for me to go, yeah, I'm interested, then I'll switch off. So, and sometimes I end up, being surprised at the end product as well. So I was surprised at the amount of shooting is in this game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I knew this was a heavy narrative game.
Yeah.
I knew it had
the TV stuff
attached to it, and, your actions would affect both the game and the TV series and things like that. And there would be puzzles, and it had to do with time, and there was going to be sort of time manipulation bits, and there would be and I haven't seen it yet, but things like where you could freeze time and investigate things and collect clues and things like that.
Yeah, that was like one of the first kind of demos they showed of it.
So yeah, it was kind of like, CSI Time Travel Edition, the Doctor Who CSI crossover thing. And I thought, yeah, I'm interested in this, and I like the whole idea and what they're saying behind it. So that was about as much information that I had in it. The game itself, so when you're playing and the game starts off and you are going to see your friend, and you're off to find, he's now a scientist, and he's invented this thing, and he's asked you to come and see it. Things start to go awry, and you get caught in the middle. There is a bit of a mishap that happens as well. And as a result of this mishap, you end up developing sort of powers.
Yeah.
Okay. So at that point...
Time powers.
Yes. I thought you were going in a completely different direction, which I'm glad you didn't. So you end up developing these powers, and it's at this point where the game starts to feel like Infamous.
Okay.
But in a good way as well.
Yeah, I like Infamous.
Yep, yeah. It did feel like Second Son?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one with Delphson.
Yeah.
So it does feel quite a bit like that.
That's cool.
Learn your powers. They get dished out to you as, you know, all of a sudden, shit, something's happening. And, you know, instinctively you use that power, then you learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
The powers are great for the combat. The combat is really good. I'm enjoying the gunplay involved in this game. So you end up in situations where, you know, you've got all the bad guys are coming towards you and you're armed with a weapon. What you can do is you can freeze time. You can freeze somebody. So you kind of put them in like this time bubble. And they're frozen and they can't move. But what you can do then is you can fire your bullets, and your bullets will, you know, leave your gun at normal velocity, and then they'll hit the time bubble that you've created.
Mm-hmm.
And the time bubble lasts there for a little bit of time, then it dissipates.
And then all the bullets hit.
All the bullets hit the guy, and it launches him up in the fucking air like a launch pad.
That's cool.
You can do things like that, freeze your enemies, and it gives you the jump on them. You've got like a time dash. So you push it and you're able to, you know, move quickly from one end of the screen to the other.
What exactly makes it a time dash?
What makes it a time dash is you are... To you, it looks like you're moving in a solid movement from left to right because you're able to manipulate time. To your enemies, it looks like you've blinked from one point to another.
Okay.
And the way the animations and things work, it's done well. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's... I'm trying to think. You know how sometimes you will see in movies where they will, they say vampires can move very fast.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Okay.
That kind of idea. It's done really well. One of your other powers as well is you can harness a time. You can build it up into pure energy and then release it like a bomb.
Okay.
So it's kind of like grenades.
Yeah.
So you've got these time grenades, and they're quite restrictive in the way that you do. Once you've start focusing the time, you can only aim. So you need to make sure that whatever you want to hit with this, you're pointing in roughly in the same direction of where it is, because it's not like a grenade where you can pull it back and then, you know, have a look around and see where you're going to be before you launch it.
Again, it's kind of like the Infamous powers.
Yes, yeah. And there is a time shield where you create the...
It somewhat kind of feels like they just took a bunch of superhero powers and then put time in the front of them.
They have, yes.
So they're like, you've got your time shield. It's a shield that uses time energy.
Yes. It works quite well.
If it works mechanically, then whatever. The fictional reason for it is less important.
Exactly, yeah. But it does. It feels like you've got a character that could pop into Infamous very easily. But I do like the way that the combat feels with it. It feels a bit like the... Oh, what was the... Can you remember the John Woo game?
Oh, Stranglehold.
Stranglehold. Now, that felt... quite fluid, wasn't it? Because you were able to, you know, jump up in the air, and when you were flying through the air, you would slow time and you could do the gunplay and things like that. You had the parkour where you could run on the walls and things like that. Wet was another game that kind of done that as well.
That makes sense. Those are both very heavily based on Max Payne, which obviously was a previous Remedy game.
Yes, yeah. So Yeah, so it's kind of come full circle, really.
Yeah.
yeah, so you can do... you're getting really involved bits of combat when you're walking in. So I walked into a room and there was a couple of guys to my left. I froze them, fired bullets at them. They were taken care of. There was guys coming towards me. I did the dash. And the cool thing as well is when you're using your powers, your enemies react. They react verbally. So, you know,
they
you're free.
Swear words to these things going, ah, fucking time.
You'll freeze a guy and he'll go, how's that fucking possible? He's not moving. and it just adds to the world and adds to the atmosphere. You do the dash, so you're there 1 minute and you're not the next.
Yeah.
And they're going, did you see that? Where did he go? And it is, you know, it's not just random phrases that are thrown in and they're the right phrases reacting to the right things at the right time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so it's more contextual.
Yes, yeah, that was the word I was looking for. Yeah, yeah, it is more contextual and... Yeah,
it's always a what feels like a small thing in games, but also like it adds a lot when it's there.
Yes,
it was like one of the things that made that people still talk about like Fear quite a lot about how good the AI was in it, but mainly they just mean they reacted to lots of stuff around them. You know, they reacted to what you were doing quite a lot.
Yeah,
or even The Division recently. Like one of the things that I both liked and kind of disliked was enemies will, like when you gun down someone, will react to it and shout something and be like, oh, they got Fred!
Right.
And then you're sitting there like, oh man, that was someone's friend. He was called Fred. I just shot him in the face. Oh no. He was just a rioter. He's not even a bad guy, really. What are we doing with our life? Guess I'll gun the rest of these guys down then, think about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I quite like the whole combat and the gunplay and things like that. Other than that, you'll end up with there's puzzles that can be solved. Now, these kind of puzzles we've seen before. There is, as you walk into a room, there's something that falls down. Okay,
uh-huh.
It's hanging from the ceiling and it falls down. You go, oh, look at that. Luckily, it just missed me. And then later on, you find that you need to be up on a top ledge somewhere to get into a building in the window.
Mm-hmm.
If only there was a way that you could get to that ledge. Oh, hang on. See that thing that fell in the floor?
Yeah.
That was originally at the same height. Hmm. If only I could rewind time. Oh, hang on. And yeah. So, but again, it's not fresh.
Yeah.
But it works.
Yeah, because yeah, well done.
If it's original. So, yeah, you've got those types of puzzles and things going on as well. The story's interesting. I quite like it. I like the whole idea that they've got this. You know, you play the game as the first act that you play will take you probably about an hour and a half or so. So it's the beginning of the story, and there's things to go and check out and do, and you learn your basic combat and things like that.
Yeah.
After that happens, you get one of the junctions, they call them junctions, and this is where you decide the turn that the story is going to do.
Okay.
So at so this
your,
point
is your Telltale Games moment.
Yes, yeah. And
Charlie from Lost will remember this.
Yeah, so you've got your point, and the way that it works or what happens is that the television series,
uh-huh,
is told based a lot of the times it's told from characters that you're not playing as.
Okay.
So sometimes it's told from the point of view from the bad guys.
Yeah, but are they at least characters that are in the actual game?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, that's good at least.
So it's characters that you see all the time, but it's just expanding on the story.
Yeah, kind of fleshing out what they're doing when you're not shooting at them.
Yes, yeah. So it gets to the point where in the beginning of the game you find out what's happening, you find out who the baddie is, there's a bit of a reveal about who he is, and you go, oh no, I didn't expect it was him, oh very good, you got me. And then the story ends, and it ends the same way as Alan Wake. There is a bit of it where it says end of end of Act 1, or it used to, I can't remember what it used to say for Alan Wake, and they play a bit of
Alan Wake, it was episodes, I think. Yes, because they tried to make it seem like, again, like a TV show, they were trying to make it seem like Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and there's a piece of music, there's end music. Yep, so it doesn't hear as well. Then you get the junction, so the junction takes over, and you're now playing as the bad guy. And the bad guy's walking around, and he's talking to one of the other main characters.
And this is the dude from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
The start of The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I didn't really want to go into that, but yes, yeah. I suppose everyone knows he's the baddie, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, so he's a bad guy and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Except for the start of Dark Knight Rises.
Yes, yeah. So you've got Littlefinger and... I forget the other dude, what he's been in.
The main character, you mean?
No, not the main character. So you've got the guy from Game of Thrones, and then you've got the black guy.
Oh, I don't know. They might have both been in The Wire. So I know the dude from Game of Thrones was also in The Wire, I think.
Ah, right. Okay.
I never watched The Wire. I hear good things about it, but I never got around to watching
it. Yeah, quite possibly. But you've got those two characters, and they're walking along. And the guy's name is Lance Reddick.
Okay.
And he has been in he was in The Wire.
Okay.
And he was also. He was in John Wick.
I've still not seen John Wick.
Oh.
I keep meaning to because it seems great.
It is awesome. It's really, really good. A good pulp film. Really good. But yeah, so you've got Littlefinger and the guy from The Wire are walking along, and the guy from The Wire says, right, what are we going to do about this situation? And he says, we can do it this way or that way. We can do it the easy way or the hard way. Mm-hmm. And then you get the choice that comes up. And if you pull the left trigger, it's the easy way. Pull the right trigger, it's the hard way. Yeah. But it gives you a little bit of information. So you get kind of a preview. So it will show you that the one way, we will try and befriend the main character. We'll try and be his friend and be nice to him and buy him tea and scones and try and convince him and talk him round to our way of thinking.
Be best buds.
Yeah. And it will show you little bits of glimpses from the future of the game. Things that you might, if you pick this, you will see this little scene somewhere. And then you can have a look at the other way as well. If you do it this way, we are going to turn against them. We will use our incredible power because we're a big corporation. We will,
of course, evil corporations.
Yes, yeah.
Evil time corporations.
Yep. And we will.
Are they selling time?
No, they're not selling time. we will say that he's, he's a terrorist and blah 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 blah. All of this. And again, you see little glimpses. Then it's decision time. Which one do you want to go for? Make your choice. And it says, right, no problem. And then it does quite a cool thing. It does the old telltale trick where it tells you what all your friends have picked.
That's cool.
And what the rest of the community have picked.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite like that. And then it kicks into the television show. The differences in this are, telltale sale. They'll try and tell you that when you make a choice in one of the games, it does change. Mm-hmm. It does make a difference. It doesn't really. This feels different. I'm not 100% sure because obviously I've not played both sides.
Yeah.
But the entire story changes.
Oh, really?
In the beginning, yeah. I'll talk to you after the show, but I don't want to spoil it. On
yeah, yeah, I understand.
The choices that you make, there's no way that the conversations that I've seen in the first episode, there's no way you could those same conversations would be in the episode had you made another choice.
Okay.
So it seems like, you know, maybe half of the episode would be different. You know, there's definite choices and different things that happen that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, like, even if the overall plot line's maybe going in a similar direction, like, enough of it's changing to make it feel like your choices are affecting
yes.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, and yeah, it's not the best story. It's not Game of the Year, but I'm really enjoying it. It's really good.
Every game can be Game of the Year.
Yeah, exactly. But I can recommend it. I can easy for me to say. I can recommend picking it up at full price as well.
Okay.
If I had to give it so far, I've played the first two episodes and I've watched the first two episodes as well. So I'm about, like I said...
How long are the episodes? Are they proper like TV show length?
Half an hour.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Proper TV show.
Yeah, proper TV show. You know,
and are they good? Does it feel like a well-made thing? Or does it feel like, you know, kind of sci-fi original?
No, it's definitely not sci-fi original. it does feel well-made.
Okay, that's very good.
Yeah, there is a couple of bits. So obviously, that you know, it's a video game and it's a video game story. So yeah, some of the powers good. That you have and some of the things that are happening are, you know,
they're video gamey.
Yeah, they're video gamey.
Weird to see real people do them or talk about them or whatever.
Yeah, so you've got these characters. The bad guys have got these suits. So your character, he can manipulate time and he can freeze it. And he can still walk around and see what's going on. There is also, there's like a phenomena happening as well called time stutters.
Okay.
And time just freezes. It doesn't affect the main character, because obviously, you know,
he's got time powers.
Yeah, so, you know, he can run through it and things like that. But the villains have got these kind of suits. They're like hazmat suits, and they've got little pointy things.
Time hazmat suits.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly what it is.
Protect them from time.
Yes, so they can move through them and things like that. In the video game, it looks fine.
But then the actual thing is like, why are you wearing these big dumb suits?
Yeah,
that's the thing. You never really know is how silly the costume design is in games, because they have to be a bit over the top to make all the characters look. You know, bad guys have to go like, oh, this is something you can shoot, so they have to stand out.
Yes.
Whereas in a TV show or a movie, it's like it's just a guy. It doesn't really make. Why are you wearing this giant armor that makes you stand out?
Yeah,
it's weird.
I think I'm admiring the game more for what it's doing.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, the
storytelling stuff.
The storytelling, and it is, you know, I don't think we've had anything on this scale before. I think it is new in the way that it's presenting the entire package.
The closest thing would be something like Defiance.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Which had like an actual sci-fi original TV show.
Yes.
Which, I don't know, that TV show
got renewed
a couple of times.
Yeah, I believe the TV show was good. The game was where the issue was.
Yeah, I didn't mind the game. The game was okay. But yeah, the TV show, people liked, at the very least, they liked that second season of it.
Yeah.
But then the third season got it cancelled. Game is still going, but I can't imagine it's going to be around.
Yeah. So, I do like this for what it's doing, what it's trying. It is an evolution of what they had done with Alan Wake, because if you remember, with Alan Wake, they had that... it was a series of videos set before the video game.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch those?
I didn't. I didn't actually know about them until you mentioned them last week. Lost podcast.
Yes.
I need to go back.
They were really good. So it just feels that, you know, they're taking their whole idea, this is the next step. One of the things that I do need to tell you as well. So it is set in this, you know, alternate, universe, if you wish. and time travel and all this. But there is a point where you are in university, the game starts, you're going through the university, and shit goes down and you end up moving through the various parts of the university. At one point you go through a lecture hall. And throughout the game, there are little bits of information and intel that you can pick up and interact. It will add it to a database, and you can then go through the menus and you can work through all the information that you've found. If it's a radio show, you know, you'll turn on the radio in game and you can hear it, and something comes up, it says such and such a program added to your database. And that's it. You can always go back and listen to it. You don't need to stay there and for the whole thing to be finished. So that's fine. You can do that. Mm-hmm. On the blackboard, there is one of these little icons. So, you know, it's telling you it's something you can pick up or interact with. So you have a look at the board, and it looks like there was a heavy lecturer in place. And there's... you know, there's diagrams and drawings, and there's arrows and boxes and dioramas and, you know, pointing things. And it says like death, life, losing this, losing his wife, losing his sister, and all sorts. And in big letters written above it all is Alan Wake.
Right. About Alan Wake.
Yeah, that somebody's doing a lecture about his books or something.
Yeah.
And when you look at the board, your character says, "Oh, I love that guy." So that's fine. And then you get to the television show, and one of the other characters, he goes home, and he's home and he's got a wife, and he's talking to his wife, and he's looking around the house, and the camera pans down, he's got the television there, and I think he puts a cup of coffee down or something, and the camera comes down, and next to his television is a novel by Alan Wake.
Of course.
So it's kind of scattered all over the place.
Yeah, it's nice they've got those mentions in there.
Yeah, it's nice little touches as well. And I've got a funny feeling there's going to be a lot more of that as well, because otherwise they wouldn't... I don't think they're pushing the whole thing about the full... You get the full game of Alan Wake and all the DLC. I think it's just nice touches to get you to go and play the game as well. But I think there'll be a lot more of them. But yeah, highly recommended.
Cool. I will be picking up when I eventually get an Xbox One.
Excellent.
Sunset Overdrive and Forza.
Yes. I was going to say Tomb Raider, but you can pick that up shortly.
Yeah, well, it's shortly. It'll be like November or something.
Cool. Played some board games as well. We spoke about it on the Lost podcast, but by now the review is already up for the latest edition of Carcassonne, which is the Star Wars edition of Carcassonne.
Yay.
We quite enjoyed that. The review is up on the website, so you can go and check it out. It's Carcassonne. Carcassonne is very good. A classic game now. 16 years old, came out in 2000. Considered to be one of the classic games alongside Settlers of Catan, or just Catan as it's known now. And they've got various expansions and versions and things like that, and they've now brought out a space version, which is now themed with Star Wars, so you can check that out. We did enjoy it very much.
It looks good. Looks like a good version of that game.
Yeah, the only issue that we did have with it is that it comes with little stickers for the meeples.
Yeah I saw your pictures of these.
Yeah, this was bad. So you ended up with these little stickers, and what you're meant to do is you're meant to peel them off and stick them on the meeple. No problem at all. Unless the sticker sheet hasn't been cut properly with a die. You know, that kind of like punched.
Yeah.
You ended up with Yoda lost two arms, or he lost his hand. Darth Vader lost a leg. Luke Skywalker, he got ripped in half. It was a nightmare. Eventually what I ended up having to do was kind of pull the thing off and cut around them.
It's the worst.
Oh, it was really, really bad and really difficult and frustrating for most of them. And that copy of the game now has at least, you get 5 of each meeple.
Mm-hmm.
And there is at least one of each meeple that doesn't have a set of stickers on it.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it may have just been a dud, you know, luck of the draw.
Yeah.
You ended up getting a dud sticker sheet.
May just been like your portal stuff, where it's just like, you got a bad print.
Yeah, it was just frustrating. It was just one of those things. But yeah, it's still, it's Catan, it's Star Wars, it's space. Go check it out.
Yeah.
It's cool. Did we play anything else? I'm just trying to think if we played anything of note within the board games. Played a game of what I've been wanting to play for a little while called Isle of Sky, which is a tile laying game.
I've been wanting to play that for a while as well.
Yeah, So Ben had bought a copy of that because obviously Ben is from the Isle of Skye. The game is where you play as the leader of a clan,
uh-huh.
and the clans have various surnames. Ben's surname is one of the clans in the game. So we played that game, and the way that it works is it's tile laying, so you're using the tiles much like you would use them in Carcassonne to build your part of the Isle of Skye.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it starts off with one central tile, and then you're building things onto it. You're building the best network that you can, and it can consist of roads, and they can be, you know, farms and brocks, and there can be whiskey trade on it, and all sorts of different things that you can get, and you get different points. One of the biggest things about the game is you never know what's going to score you points. So there is four different things that will score you points, and they get taken in combination. So the game lasts 5 rounds, and there are, like I said, 4 different things that will score you points, and they're numbered lettered A, B, C, and D. On your first turn, you will be scored on A and B. Then you may be scored on C and D. Then you may be scored on A, B, and D. Then you may be C, B, and A, or, you know, that kind of idea. But the things that are labeled A, B, and C, A, B, C, and D, come from a pool of 20 tiles.
Okay.
So you randomly draw 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
The rulebook comes with, you know, suggestions of combinations of the 4 to use. Or what you can do is you can just put them in a bag and draw 4 out randomly. And you stick them up, and that's it. Now you know what you're building towards. So in our case, we were going towards a gold coins at one point. We were building our structures had to be in columns of 3 or more. So you were getting bonus points for that. You were getting bonus points for the amount of sheep that you had, or you were getting points for the amount of cows that you had. You know, there's various things that come up. So what happens is you've set all that up and you're ready to play. On your turn, you draw 3 tiles. And what you have to do is you have to decide to discard one of the tiles that you're not going to have. And then you've got 2 tiles, and you bid on these 2 tiles. You put money on the tiles. And essentially what you're saying is, I have 20 coins, for example. I'm willing to pay 10 coins for this one tile that I have.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to pay, you know, 2 coins for this other tile that I don't have. So you put the money that you're willing to pay for each of these tiles down. And this is all done in secret. Nobody can see what you're actually doing.
Okay. So it's kind of secret bidding.
Yes, it's kind of a secret bidding. You've got a little screen, and after everyone's done, you reveal your screen, and everyone can now see which of your 3 tiles you're getting rid of. So everyone gets rid of their tiles. And now you can see the other 2 tiles and the value that everyone's put on these 2 tiles. Now what happens is, starting with a predetermined order, you will go around the table, and everyone has a chance to buy one of the other person's tiles. So, for example, Kieran, you've got two tiles you really want, and you valued them. You don't have a lot of money, so you valued them at 5 coins each. I've saved a little bit of money, so it comes to me, and I see one of your tiles, and I buy it from you. You don't want me to because you wanted to keep it, but I give you the five coins. There's nothing you can do about that. You now take that money, plus you take the money that you had reserved. So now you end up with 10 coins, but you have no tile. Okay, I now have that tile. When it comes around to your turn, you can do the same. You can use that money that you have to buy another tile.
Okay.
From somebody else. So it creates this really nice economic system. And it's really unique. I've never seen it before. And it works really, really well. So you end up with this situation where you could end up drawing 3 tiles from the bag, and 2 of them are tiles that you really want.
Yeah. And also, even if you have like a bunch of tiles you don't want,
well,
you don't want to then make them super expensive because people might not buy them off you anyway.
Yeah.
You kind of want to keep them reasonable so you get some money to buy something else for someone else.
Yes, that's it.
That makes sense. It seems like a cool system, some strategy.
Also, what happens at the end of each round as well. So you score points at the end of each round, based on whatever the scoring mechanisms are for that round, and that's fine. And then you, before the beginning of the next round, everyone gets money. They earn income. So everyone's starting tile will give them 5 coins.
Okay.
That's, you can't take that away. Everyone is guaranteed to get 5 coins, no problem. Now, you can add other tiles. So you can add roads to your farmhouse. And if they've got little whiskey barrels on them, you will get 1 coin for every whiskey barrel on a road that connects back to your farmhouse.
Okay.
So we had my fiance who... we were all getting 5 coins, or sometime one of us was getting 6 coins. She was getting 9 coins because she's got all these whiskey barrels lined up and they're going back. So that's fine, no problem at all. You get your coins for your income, but you get an additional coin income if you happen to be in last place. So you get... a certain amount of coins depending on where you are. So if you're coming last place, you will get your difference in points. I can't remember exactly. I think it's 1 coin plus, 1 coin for every position that you're behind. So if you're in 4th place, you will get 3 gold coins or whatever the case is. But essentially what it's doing is it's like rubber banding.
Yeah, it's kind of giving you a chance to come back from the brink of defeat.
Yes.
I like that because there are, we've complained before about things like, like the Mafia style stuff where, and that you're just straight up out. But, a lot of games still have that issue, not to that extreme, but if you fall behind, you're behind. Yeah.
Yes. This doesn't have that. It's really good. You should definitely see if you can pick it up.
Yeah, I've been wanting this for a while, so.
Yeah, this was one of the games that we went to go and see at Essen. Mm-hmm. And we actually bumped into somebody at... the show opens at 10 o'clock every day. We got chatting to somebody at the Mayfair Games booth who was from somewhere in England. A lovely lady. She was busy learning the game. It was in the morning and we're chatting away. She said, "Oh, where are you working?" And we said, "Where we're working." "Oh, we'll come and see you. Make sure you come and get a game of this." And we said, "Yeah, I want to come and buy it." Sold out in the first day. the game sold out and it is constantly out of print and they're constantly bringing it back.
The fact that they're making more prints is always good. I dislike when, it doesn't happen so much to smaller games, but when bigger games do, like, got our print run, so it's stock. Check again in a couple of years, or when is it Stronghold Games that usually ends up buying out of print things and then print them again?
Yeah.
Something like that. One of those publishers usually does that.
Yes, but So they've been, I think it's a case of, you know, they can only make so many things, so it's always getting printed, and they send, you know, they'll send 50 copies to America, then they'll send 50 copies to the UK, and but they're always selling out, and it's always, we're awaiting more stock. So if it does come into stock, I definitely think you should consider picking it up. I'm considering getting a copy for myself. We really enjoyed it.
It seems pretty cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was it for everything I've played.
Awesome.
Cool. Have we got any news or anything you want to, is there anything you should be looking at?
So I didn't open up, but there's the one that jumps to mind is we talked a couple of weeks ago about Evolution Studios shutting down.
Yes. Yeah, this was a little bit... So, yeah, we weren't happy.
Well, no. Yeah, because we safe really liked Drive Club and Motorstorm. So yeah, Sony was shutting down the guys that made Motorstorm and Drive Club.
Yep.
And it seems that Codemasters have...
Our friends.
Yes. we're big fans of Codemasters.
Yes.
Have kind of swooped in at the last moment and have hired on... I'm not 100% sure if it is the entire of them. Everything just kind of... It says they picked up the studios, basically.
Yes.
So Codemasters have basically swooped in, picked up Evolution Studios, and so... If anyone is losing their jobs, it's very few. But it seems like, for the most part, everyone will be keeping their jobs but working for Codemasters.
Yeah.
And Codemasters asserts their dominance as being the one big developer working on arcade racers.
Yeah. I am very pleased at this. This is...
Yeah, same. Like, there are few homes that seem as fitting as Codemasters.
Yeah. I think it's a very smart move. They have bought the competition.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, Drive Club in a lot of ways felt like Grid to me, which was obviously a Codemasters game.
Uh-huh.
So it's nice to see them kind of in the same home.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really pleased, and hopefully they can do something.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing what they do with Codemasters behind them.
Yeah.
Presumably... Yeah. They won't be able to take their engine with them from Sony, so it'll be interesting to see what they can pull off with the Codemasters engine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just cool that the guys got to keep their jobs.
Yeah, that's always good. But also, they're talented devs, they would have found somewhere else.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of developer jobs.
Yeah. So I'm pleased. That is cool.
Yeah, I agree. There wasn't a whole lot. Did you see these Ford adverts? I'll send them to you after this.
Right.
Basically, Ford released a couple of adverts that they collaborated with Konami to make.
Right.
So they brought in David Hayter. And I forget his name, the guy that voices the Colonel.
Solid. Yes, I did see this actually. I've not seen the adverts, but.
They're really good. They're dubs over sections of Metal Gear Solid where they're inserted, like, you know, Ford advertising. It's really weird. It's really good. It's such a bizarre concept.
Cool.
They're funny, though. They're worth taking a look. That Rock Band 4 PC port thing that was on Fig failed. Oh,
good.
Yeah, it seemed like a weird idea in the first place.
Yeah.
And the current thing that's on Fig is Consortium the Tower.
Right.
Which is a kind of Deus Ex style game where their big focus is they're kind of AI and their characters with all these like dialogue things and multiple ways to finish the game, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It was one of those weird games where it kind of went under the radar for a lot of people on Kickstarter, because it was on Kickstarter and failed, but kind of generally had a positive buzz about it. It just wasn't a very loud buzz. And being on Fig, they've managed to raise more than they were asking for on Kickstarter. Because they started asking for the same amount as they asked for on Kickstarter on Fig, and they've raised more than that. So,
All right, okay.
good on them, because it's good that they got a second chance, because I haven't played the first. The Consortium was a kind of really small indie game, and the Tower is like kind of supposed to be a bigger scale sequel to that. I've never played it, but I was meant to because it seemed like a cool thing. That's kind of it. I mean, there's some other stuff, but.
Cool, yeah. One of the things I'd spotted just before we started recording, we kind of spoke about it briefly before we started recording, was I'm always going on about the card game Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Yeah.
And I'm also going on about the digital version of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd spoken in the past that you can pick up the game for between 7 and 10 quid, depending on specials and depending on what platform you pick it up on. You know, whether you pick it up on iPad, Android, or Steam. There is also a season pass for it, which basically brings out all the expansion decks as well. And they've got a season one, and it's £15, and it brings, I think you're getting 4 or 5 expansions to buy the physical copies of the card game. Instead of paying £15, you're looking at around about £40-50. So it's quite worth it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not bad at all. They have just announced that for season two of their expansion pass, season pass, so the second season pass, they're going to be taking it to Kickstarter, which is rather strange, yeah. So, I mean, the game's already established.
Yeah, it just seems like a kind of weird way of doing pre-orders through a crowdfunding website.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but I don't understand it.
Yes, yeah. It is rather strange. The only reason I can think about it is that the main packs, the expansion packs that are going to come within Season Pass 2, are they expand the way that the game is played. So at the moment, the game is played again with 1 to 5 heroes. Well, 3 to 5 heroes. You don't want any less than that. But yeah, between 3 and 5 heroes battling one villain. The new ones will have you're battling as a team of supervillains. So it does change the physical game in the turn order is changed, and the basic mechanic of playing cards and things and powers and that doesn't change. All that happens is you've got extra villains. So instead of the game being all the heroes take their turn, then the villain takes his turn, you've got hero one playing, then villain one playing, then hero two, then villain two, and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. It goes along. And I think that's going to take a lot more development, and it's going to change the digital version of the game. And it may be a way of gauging interest before they actually do that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
It seems strange, though, because if this fails, does this mean they're not going to update it then? They're not going to put the new content into the game? Like, you'd assume they would do it anyway, right?
Yeah, it is bizarre.
But, like, if the audience isn't there for the Kickstarter, would they just kind of stop the app then? Because, like, it seems like what else do you do with the app other than, like, you know, bug fixes and stuff if you're not going to, you know, add the expansion content and stuff?
Yeah, well, they've got everything there. The only thing that is missing is the pack, the one expansion that has just been kickstarted, that's mm-hmm. the final expansion, and I think there's 2 expansions before that, and a couple of what they call mini expansions. So it, you know, was bonus heroes and villains and environments and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not if that stuff doesn't come out, the game's not going to be broken or anything like that. But yeah, I do see your point. As I don't know why. Yeah,
it just seems odd. Like, it seems like you would expect they would already know roughly how many people would buy this, you know, this content.
Yeah,
like, they should already have the numbers on that from, you know, their stuff. It seems like they're just using it as a weird pre-order thing rather than a funding method, because they probably already know this number of people would buy this if we released it.
Yeah.
And unless they're really hard up for cash and are like, well, we can't afford to release it to that point,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, seems like they have other issues if that's the case. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's no way to know, but it seems weird.
Yeah, it's rather strange, but yeah. There is, you just sent me a link, you reminded me about something that I'd forgotten that it was coming out, as well as another Kickstarter. So I think we've spoken about this game quite a bit when we first started doing the podcast, and we were talking about classic games and games that we loved and things like that.
Well, you did. I've never played it.
Yes.
I've never played any of them.
So one of the series and one of the games that I mentioned on the original PlayStation was games called Fear Effect.
Mm-hmm.
And there is now a Kickstarter for a kind of a reboot. Well, not a reboot, but a new game in the series. Yeah.
I like the art style on it.
Yeah. So that is, the art style is unchanged.
Oh, is that what it looks like originally?
Yes.
I should really look at those old games.
So the game, Fear Effect, it's, they're going to bring out a new game called Fear Effect Sedna. The game is done. It's being brought out under the auspices of, I forget what that program's called, the kind of indie arm of Square that they have.
Yeah, it's the Square Enix one. I forget what it's called.
Square Collective?
Yeah, it's Square Collective. The Square Collective stuff's weird because they do this weird kind of, you know, indie crowdfunding thing of their own. It doesn't make money. It's just kind of to judge, like, interest and stuff.
Yes.
And then they push it out to actual crowdfunding things like Kickstarter.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing. But, you know, it lets you use Square Enix IPs like this, apparently. So.
Yeah. So what had happened was these guys had went to Square and said, we've got this idea. Because the whole idea about the collective, like you said, is they, nothing's off the table. If you have any ideas, you can fling them about and they will give you guidance and what they think. Mm-hmm. So they came to them and said, we've got this idea for an IP, but it's your IP.
Yeah.
What do you think? And they've said, yeah, that's fine. You know, we like the idea, but obviously they're not going to put their own money into it. And that's why it's ended up in Kickstarter as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, I've just backed it. As we were talking as well, so I'd be looking forward to this and see what it looks like.
It looks cool. It may make me go back and actually try the other one at some point.
Yeah, if you have a look, if you scroll down the project page as well, mm-hmm. you can see a couple of screenshots from Fear Effect and Fear Effect 2 Retro Helix.
All right.
So you can see that the art style is there.
Yeah, they look very similar.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks a lot nicer in the new screenshots, but obviously.
Yeah. The games are really good, especially the first one, really good story, things like that. Fear Effect 2 Retro Helix was, they did this weird thing where they took the main characters, Hannah and a new character called Rain, and they kind of sexualized them, and it was really weird what they did. It was,
looking even at the, there's like a GIF kind of part of the way down where they've got like a character section on this Kickstarter. The one for Rain is just her in her underwear massaging Hannah in her underwear with a gun.
Yes.
Strange.
Yeah, so that came from, that was the whole thing that they did in the second game, and it was really, it was strange. The game was trying to be edgy and, but you should check them out. I think you can still pick them up on the store.
Yeah, they were on the PlayStation Originals.
Yes, yeah. I think I own them still. I'm pretty sure I bought them again. You should check them out. They're really good. Cool. I think, was there anything else?
I think that's it.
I found some more Kickstarters and things that I've been browsing, but I think what I'll do is I'll send those through to Kieran when we're off air and getting to spend money again.
We need to get into the habit again of writing Kickstarter posts on website rather than just getting each other to buy them.
I know. But yeah, so I think that's about it. I don't think there's anything else. Trying to think. Looking at kind of new releases, is there anything mentioning? Coming out in on the 24th, sorry, the 22nd of April is one you're not keen on, Kieran, and it's one I'm still kind of humming and hawing over, and that's Star Fox Zero.
Yeah.
I think I might wait. I think I'm happy to wait on that one.
We've got
quite a few things to keep us occupied, so I'm... You know, until somebody says it's really good or it's really bad, I'm happy. Just kind of
first impressions from people that have got early copies are not super positive.
Right.
Yeah. Ratchet and Clank's out that day as well. People should buy that instead.
Yes.
Because that game is great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Right, I think other than that, the only thing left to do is the usual ham-fisted way that I try and squeeze in that you can send us an email, and you can send us an email to podcast@glitchfreegaming.com. You can find us on Twitter by searching for or tweeting at glitchfreegame, and on Facebook, just search for Glitchfree Gaming. You'll find our group there. I think that's the one we're most active on. So whenever there's a new podcast up, we put that up and we put the reviews and things.
Is there anything on the site you want to plug at the moment?
We're doing quite a bit of board game stuff. So one of the things I keep saying, I think I say it on the podcast, but normally when we're talking as well, is need to get some more board game stuff out.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've got the review for Star Wars Carcassonne. You should go and check out. And Kieran, you did a really cool write up of all the, well, not all of them, but
yeah, a handful of the Kickstarter games that I bought recently.
Yeah, so you give a quick rundown of what the game looks like. There's a couple of nice photos to give you an idea of the artwork and stuff like that. And yeah, so people should go and check that out as well. It's a good read, and it has links to where you can buy these games as well, if you can buy them.
Yeah, where I could find them. I think I found some for all of them.
Think you did, yeah.
But yeah, so, there's definitely paperback, for example, is constantly out of stock, but
yes,
you can pre-order it for whenever they do an hour wave. If it does well, I'll write another one. I still have more Kickstarter games. It gives me an excuse to do things like play Bright Future again, which I've only played once but really enjoyed and kind of want to write about, but only played once. Did you ever play Bright Future? I remember we both backed it.
Yes, I did. I did. I learnt the rules for it, and I think I played a run through.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've had the chance to play it, but I definitely want to. I remember that it was quite good and things.
It's an interesting game, it's quite fun. If nothing else, it's got really good artwork and a really good kind of theme to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've only played it once and it's good, but that doesn't do well for writing about. All the games I chose to write about in that piece were ones that I had played multiple times.
Yeah, cool. Yep. So, I might try and do one of those as well.
Yeah.
Because I've got a fair amount of
Kickstarters.
Yes, absolutely.
You could just start reviewing any of the board games you have, and you could have an infinite amount of, you know, writing material.
I suppose, yeah. Cool. So that's it, I think. Any last minute things to mention or?
No, I don't think so. There's probably something.
Yeah, quite possibly.
There always is.
Yeah. Okay, well, until next week then, we shall see you later. Be good. Play lots of games. So until then, we'll see you next week.
See ya.
See ya.
I've hit off.